Welcome to the VoxGig Developer Relations Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Roger. I speak to people in the software development community about developer relations, public speaking, and community events. I'm the CEO of VoxGig, a software consultancy that builds DevRel tools. Because we believe in the power of community, we host a monthly virtual online meetup for everyone in developer relations. Check out devrelmeetup.com. And visit voxgig.com to view our work, use our tools, and sign up for our newsletter. Okay. Please sit back and enjoy my fireside chat with today's guest. I'm talking to Liz Acosta, a developer advocate who can and has done everything. We talk about developer relations 1.0, 1.5, and 2.0. And you'll just have to listen if you want to find out what those stages are. And then things take a philosophical turn. All right, let's talk to Liz. Liz! It's great to have you here today. Welcome to the Fireside with VoxGig podcast, talking about developer relations. I'm super excited to have you here today because you are looking after a really cool open source project, which is maintained by Snowflake, right? The project is Streamlit, which helps front-end averse Python developers build front-ends. Are you kind of like the overall maintainer, or are you the person responsible for getting into the hands of developers? Or are you the sort of cat herder? What do you do for Streamlit?
Yeah, so I just started last week. So I'm actually still figuring it out.
Okay. What have you done in one week?
Yeah. So my official title is Developer Content Marketing Manager. So basically, Streamlit has this incredible community, as a lot of open source projects do. And they've got these apps that they're creating, right? So it's a data visualization library in Python. And we want to find a way to showcase that, to showcase these creators, these users. And so my job is to take a look at that content and like help guide developers like producing content, sharing that content, distributing the content, and figuring out what topics would help best serve the Streamlit community. I'm only in week two and I'm still figuring it out. But so far what I'm finding is that, Streamlit, there's just this awesome, rich, robust community of Streamlit users. And we want to find a way to like showcase those users and really kind of like support them in showcasing these apps that they're building by being like the best content manager possible.
Awesome. And we were talking just before we started recording about how DevRel jobs are these, you kind of have to do everything, right? You got to code, you got to write, you got to speak, you got to do community management. And that's, it's kind of perfect for you, right? Because they were looking for somebody who could literally do all of these things. Do you feel some people say that a single DevRel person is almost like an entire team. They're expected to deliver. Do you have people to help? Do you have to do all this yourself?
So I do. I have an amazing team that I'm working with. We're all figuring it out still. So it's like, I find that content is still like, it's like, am I still DevRel? I think it's still DevRel adjacent. And I do work with Streamlit has a couple of developer advocates and I work closely with them. I plan on working closely with them. It's only week two, because they're the folks who are in the community and who can tell me what's like going on there. I've got an awesome team of just really cool people. And that's the exciting thing I think about this role is that it's still very cross-functional in that like I want to talk, to the maintainers of the open source project. I want to talk to the users. I want to talk to the developer advocates and see how I can support them with content. I've got a really cool team behind me.
It must be nice to have proper resources because you were a developer advocate previously for startups, right? And you kind of have to be a bit scrappy in startups. You kind of have to do a lot of stuff yourself, right?
Yeah.
You need stickers. You got to order the stickers. Is there much of a change? Does it feel a little bit different? You're suddenly like, I've all this resources. What do I do first?
Yeah. It's different in that I feel like I need to make sure I think very clearly about what an objective is for what I'm pursuing, right? So let's say that there's a piece of content I want to create. I feel like the more stakeholders you have involved, the more you need to like be very intentional about what you're creating, what you're putting out there, what project you're pursuing. Whereas like, you know, you're in a startup, it's a little bit more scrappy, like you're right.
Yeah, you just throw stuff at a wall, right? And see what sticks.
Yeah, you're like, I have a blog post idea here. I wrote up a rough draft. What do you all think, you know? Whereas I feel like with this, I need to be a little bit more intentional because other people's time is involved. But I appreciate that because it's making me think a lot more strategically, right? Like, so let's say like I have an idea for content, right? Like, well, what is the objective? Who are the stakeholders? Like, what is the proposed timeline? It's not just like, oh, I'll get when I get around to it, or, oh, we might publish this in like a few months. It needs to be a lot more strategic. And I actually really appreciate that because I do feel like I'm kind of working on this bigger picture, just like in my own work, about how do we create content that's not just reactive or kind of like we put it out there and then it doesn't do anything. Like, how are we going to measure the success of like a blog post? And I think that like having more people involved makes you think about that more, makes you be a little bit more intentional and strategic about it.
Yeah, it's, and I know it's hard to compare because different companies are different, but do you think there has been a change in the way that developer relations is seen in larger companies? And I'm asking you specifically because you had previously worked at Twilio, right? And then you were in startups for a while, and now you're back at a larger company. And maybe it's unfair to ask you to compare Twilio to anybody else because they're one of the like original developer relations companies. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like where you are now has more intentionality, more design, more structure around it. Maybe it's just because we've all had the benefit of having done developer relations now for a while, whereas Twilio sort of kind of was one of the companies that invented it. What are the differences, or are there any differences?
Yeah, you know, so I kind of see Twilio as, so, you know, developer relations like kind of has its origin story in the 80s, right? And Apple, and like Apple had the first like developer evangelist, all of that stuff. And I kind of see that as DevRel 1.0, right? Then like, what is it, like 2008-ish, we have like DevRel 1.5, which is, I think like, you think Twilio, you think Stripe, you think of these companies. And it was kind of like these rock stars, right? And even like, I feel like I saw an article somewhere and one of the DevRel from Twilio describes it as like, you know, we're these rock stars who go out and we talk to people, we speak at conferences. And, you know, it's shifted, right? Like, that was like kind of, I feel like, riding this first wave of, or not first wave, I know there's been many waves in tech, but that was like one wave of tech, right? And you could like throw money in a DevRel and like go speak at conferences and you're this rock star.
Yeah.
I think that now we're starting to see this shift where, okay, cool, you were a rock star. Now, how are you impacting the company for real, right?
Now there's
so many different solutions and products out there. You know, there's so many APIs, there's so many software as a service like companies out there that now you're competing with a bunch of other rock stars, right? And so how do you then prove that there's impact? And I think that in a way, now we're at DevRel 2.0 and we're being kind of forced to grow up.
No, it's true, right? It's more about DevRel ops.
But yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But it's more about the whole team together. Right.
Yeah.
You're right. In the, you know, in the olden days, what 10 years ago, I was one of those guys, right? It's just, apply to as many CFEs as possible. Right. Just go. And it was like, literally, I've been to all these cities. What impact did you have? No, I went to these cities. Impact? What impact? I don't care. I'm just speaking at loads of conferences. But it did have its problems. Previous organizations where I've worked, it caused a lot of jealousy with the engineers who were just doing engineering. You know, you had these people going out and it looked like they were living the high life. Now, if you've ever been an actual developer advocate, travel is not, it's not that glamorous. It actually sucks a lot. But it looked like there was a group in the company that was special and that didn't really have to work. And because there was no professionalism around it, they were probably right. So it's good. I think it's good. And is that what you're noticing now in the new organization that you're in? It's just more professional. There's an understanding that developer relations is a real thing that has to happen. It's an organizational function. That's a good question. Should it be its own function, right? Or should it, you know, people put it under engineering or marketing, or should it be its own thing?
And I love this question because it always comes up. I do think it should be its own. I think it should be its own function, because DevRel, kind of like the whole package of developer relations, I think of it like its own product almost, right? Because like what we're trying to do is create a relationship. We're trying to create an experience. And that I think is its own function. You can treat it as its own function. It has each part in that. Like, so especially as developer relations matures, like you can see it branch out, right? You have your developer advocates, and those are kind of seen as the people who go out to the conferences and speak to people. Then you've got like community management, right? And that's like falls under developer relations. Then you've got folks who are like writing tutorials and documentation and stuff like that. And it kind of becomes its own thing. And at the end of the day, the reason why I think it's its own function is because the question we're asking ourselves and the thing we're trying to do in developer relations is create a relationship, create an experience that is so positive that even if the product, which I like to call the solution, is not what the user is looking for, that experience, that relationship was so positive that they will go to their friends, their colleagues, their coworkers and be like, hey, have you heard about this solution? It's really, really cool. And that I would call, like, if you were to measure that, I would measure it. I feel like the net promoter score is the most appropriate measurement. And that's like a measurement that, like, I think would, that's like something, that's a measurement that product tends to align itself with, right? And so you can think of, I think, developer relations as its own product, its own feature, its own, you know, function that has all these different parts under it that then like has all these different metrics that all add up to a net promoter score, right? That all like support this idea, this goal, this mission of how do we create a relationship and experience that is so positive that this person is then going to go and like suggest this to someone else.
Yeah, I really like that. And I like it because I don't know how much you've worked with, I guess, vertical SaaS companies or companies that are not software companies to begin with, but have APIs. And these days, everybody needs an API these days, right? And you can see the lack of execution on their developer relations. And they know it themselves, right? They have a dissatisfaction with their communities, their portals, their documentation. But at the same time, the organizations themselves are, developer relations is completely fragmented amongst different groups. And there's nobody, what you've just described, there's no joined up thinking around that at all, right? So I think we need to advocate for ourselves more, that we need to be an organizational unit. I strongly agree with that.
I think we'll eventually see that. I think that DevRel is kind of still in the process of defining what are our boundaries, what is like the parameter, what's the perimeter, what are we doing and how do we measure it? But I do feel like as it continues to mature, I think that we will start seeing DevRel as its own functioning within its own function within organizations.
And I have to ask you the question that everybody's asking these days, right? What is the role of AI in DevRel? So what can we do with all these new tools and all this fun stuff? Everybody's trying to figure something out. What do you think?
So first of all, I think that AI can never replace DevRel.
Oh yeah, okay, so 100%, right. Yeah. Let's just get that off the table.
So let's get off the table. Developer relations is not going.
No. We're gonna get those like iPads on a little trolley and push that into conferences and try and sell our software that way. Oh yeah.
No, we're not going anywhere.
No.
I think that I forget Buddha, who works at Tyke Tick. I can't remember how to say that name, but he gave a really great talk at Developer Week. He was on a panel. We were talking about this, and that the role of AI should be taking care of the mundane stuff so that we can do the more creative things, right? So we can do the more interesting things. And so the way I see AI playing into DevRel, and in particular in my role as like content manager, right, is it can help take care of this stuff like checking grammar, right? Like understanding like what's the tone, like what's the voice that we want in our content, and then like training like an AI, like a AI model on it, right? And then being like, okay, cool, now you can just run this on your content, on your draft before I get to it, and take care of the little things like, you know, maybe we have like a style in our style guide, it's like we do title capitalization a certain way, right? Or we want to call our methods a certain name or something like that, right? There's specific terminology we want to use. We can train an AI model on that, right? And be like, okay, at this company, at this brand, we do it this way. And so it's like an easy way to kind of like take care of some of the low-hanging fruit, so that then I can focus on like the more like creative parts of editing or guiding content, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that there's embracing it as a way to make kind of the more like monotonous tasks a little bit easier. It's what I think. I hope.
And you're a Python coder, right? So do you feel, I mean, that's kind of the language of AI. I'm stuck in TypeScript land. So I'm sort of like hand me down APIs and SDKs for AI. I know Python, but I'm just not very good at it. My brain doesn't work Python. I've just been JavaScripted for too long.
I feel like JavaScript is like, I'm intimidated by JavaScript. So
it was a language written in 3 weeks on a death march, so it shows. whereas Python, right? What's his name? Guido. He sat down. He carefully designed the language, right? And it really shows. Are you tempted to get out the keyboard and start doing some interesting stuff yourself, right? Given that you have some power here and possibly large amounts of content. I don't want to put you on the spot, right? I'm just but are you tempted?
Of course. I mean, back when AI was all not new, but like when it was kind of becoming really popular, I saw like a tweet or whatever they call it on X now. And this person had taken all of her journals from when she was a kid and trained a model on it, right?
Oh, wow. Okay, interesting.
Yeah. And so whenever she kind of had like these moments that were like, what do I do next? She'd ask it.
Wow.
Basically, you know, and it was kind of therapeutic, right? So I've been thinking about that for myself. How do I take all of my writing and like create this like, you know, large language model, right? That can write in my voice. So then I can just give it a prompt and be like, hey, write about this in Liz's voice.
Well, I have margaritas on the beach. Yeah.
I mean, there's like a part of me that's like, I still have to edit it and make sure, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But, 100%. Right.
But yeah, I have thought about it, at least for me. And in particular, like a little like side project I've kind of been noodling on for years, little by little, is like a tarot app, right? Like an app that, you know, gives you a tarot reading. But I'd love to be able to train it, like I said, on my voice. And so it'd be giving my style of reading.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. I I bet that doesn't exist, right? So this is like the kind of cool thing about right now is it's kind of like when the web first came out of the 90s or when mobile apps first came out, right? Because you could think of something like that, and I nearly 100% guarantee you nobody's done it yet, right?
Nobody's done it yet.
That's kind of cool. Well, there's your weekend project. That's your next hackathon.
Oh, gosh. You know, I've looked at it. I've actually kind of specced it out, and there's a lot of stuff I'd have to learn.
But you could do the data visualization for your user interactions using Streamlit. So that's done.
I could.
So that's done. Yeah. There you go. I think the interesting thing, though, is you have to have written a body. You have to have created a body of content.
Exactly.
First. Yeah, you were a photographer originally, I think, weren't you?
I've been a photographer. Yeah, I've done everything.
So the interesting thing is, I've written a lot of stuff as a developer advocate, books, articles, all that sort of stuff. I don't really mind the idea of assimilating that into like the Terminator and asking it questions. But I'm not a visual artist, but does that feel a little bit more, I don't know, dangerous if it was done to your photos or your, if you were an art, somebody like who actually draws stuff? Like, I feel it must be kind of a bit of a scary time. If you're a visual artist at the moment, right? Because it's still pretty clear when you get ChatGPT to generate stuff that it feels sort of surface level, right? But the problem with visual stuff is it's so much easier to I don't know, experience it as a human. You can still kind of tell, but it just feels more invasive. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it all can feel a little bit invasive, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
Whether it's written or visual. And yeah, I feel that. And what I'm concerned about is that the idea of AI was that it was supposed to, take care of like the stuff we don't want to do.
Right.
So that we can do the creative stuff, right? It's supposed to free up time so we can be creative. Like, that's the dream of technology. My worry is that, creative people are already not paid. They're already undercompensated.
Right? All that nonsense. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And that, like, these bigger studios or whatever are going to be like, well, we can just AI it, right? Like, we'll just whatever. And I mean, we already see that, right? Like, I think there's like, I forgot what it was. I think like ABBA or something, they have like concerts and it's basically like a projection of what they look like when they are younger. So you're going to a concert and it's like, is there really an artist there? And like, I don't know, we could talk about lip syncing. Was that fooling anyone? Is that unfair to the artist? Is that unfair to the consumer?
Let's talk about that, right? Because that's an interesting example. So Milli Vanilli, right? Were busted for lip syncing. But the weird thing was they were a European band.
Right.
And at the time, because a lot of those bands didn't have English as a first language, right? They recorded in studio and their shows were always lip synced in Europe and everybody knew they were lip synced. So on the European side of things, we were looking at it going, but like, you guys have WrestleMania and that's not real. What are you complaining about?
Yeah.
Right.
And you're totally right. And speaking of lip syncing, I love Britney Spears and I know she lip syncs. And it's fine. Or like you think about like auto-tune when that was new. Right. So I don't know. But I do feel like there will be a part of us that always wants to find the real thing. Because yes, we go to a Britney, like I've seen Britney Spears in Vegas a couple times, right?
Oh, wow. Okay. So good.
And for me, it was interesting because people are like, she doesn't sing live, she doesn't dance. And I'm like, I know that. That's not why I'm going. I'm going because I have kind of this nostalgia about her music, right? Because like, I was a kid when she was popular. And I think that there's always going to be a thing, an impulse, a compulsion inside of humans to find something that's real.
That's real, yeah.
You know, so yeah. Like, you know, yeah, I went to Vegas and I saw Britney Spears and I had a good time. You know, that was maybe more about hanging out with my friends and the nostalgia. But then, you know, I go and I snowboard, for example, right? And that's like, that's a real experience. Like, you're out in the cold, it's freezing, like you're dealing with the elements. And every time I'm there, I'm like, why am I doing this? I'm so miserable. But there's that realness that I'm craving, right? And I think that humans will always try to move toward that. And that will be the thread that keeps things real. How that's going to apply to art, I'm not sure. Like, does that mean that we'll see more performance art? Does that mean we'll see, like, there's going to be art, I think, that's going to be in reaction to that. And I don't know, like, they were asking the same question when, like, photography became popular, right?
You're right. Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's, is it the end, like, of painting, right? And it wasn't, right?
Just, but it wasn't.
It ended up in a different place. Just to be crass and commercial.
Go for it.
Is this thinking useful for developer relations, for our jobs, for our day jobs? I mean, you're talking about the need for people to interact with something that's real, right? And like, the nice thing about open source projects, especially ones that have arisen from the community, is that they feel real, right? There are maintainers, there's, you know, people who are known in the community, there's people who do the documentation, people answer the questions, whatever, right? And I think that's always why community emergent open source has always been more successful in some ways than corporate driven open source. Sometimes the corporates just throw so much money at something, let's see, like Kubernetes, where it's just going to happen, right?
Yeah.
But I've always been more drawn to the ones that have heart, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, that feels real, right? So I don't know. Is that something that we need to think about? Is that the real implication of AI? It's got nothing to do with the fancy stuff we can build with it. It's how do we stay real?
Yeah. And I think that used well, AI will take care of some of the hard, like I said, monotonous stuff, so that we can actually spend more time being real. Right. So, like, let's say your open source example, right? Like, using AI to, like, write maybe your unit tests, right? So, okay, cool. Now I don't have to worry about unit tests. Now I can think about something else. Now, and so in terms of developer relations, it's like, you know, for example, for content, right? I can use AI to take care of some of the basic editing so that then I can work personally with a developer to help them, like, develop their storytelling, help them develop, like, you know, their style, like, this is how you better express what you're trying to say. And that's the part that makes community. I think that's the real part. And if I have, like, AI taking care of, like, oh, capitalization, punctuation, just all of that kind of stuff, it's kind of like, you know, formatting in code, right? Using a linter. If we can figure out how to use it like that and make sure that it's, like, never taking away from the energy and time that we need to spend on the real stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I completely agree. It's hard to, at this point in time, it's just hard to see how it's all going to play out. Does that mean that there's going to be an AI tool that's as sort of pervasive as Git, let's say, that comes along and that does all this stuff, right? Does Linus Torvalds write yet another piece of software that everybody uses?
Oh, God.
Or are we stuck with commercial services that do it? The thing that's different this time around is that the models are so big and they need so much processing power that it's hard to see how they'll be easily democratized. That's what I'm worried about. because you are very dependent on bigger companies.
That's
so I don't know how we get around that one.
That's a very good point. I mean, but and I'm not sure where it's going to go or how this is going to be done, but think about how, because I was also, you know, using creating, you know, my degrees in filmmaking. So, you know, in the 90s, I was like using a camcorder, right? Like filming onto like tape, cassette tape, right?
Yeah.
And think about how hard then it was to get video onto your computer, right? It took like all this.
You had like special cards power and everything, right? Yeah.
And the special cables, like the whole thing, right? Yeah. And it took forever and it was really difficult. And like now you have like a camera built into your computer, right? So I can't quite visualize how you're right, you know, how do we like bring down that processing power so that it is accessible to most people, but lots of stuff that was impossible before is now possible. So
don't be too worried. Okay.
That is a good point. I don't know. I mean, I think that that is a relevant concern, and I think it's important to have that concern because you're absolutely right. If it doesn't end up, like if these bigger companies are like the only ones who can do this, right, who can support this, there's a danger there, right? Because it's like, well, who's training these models? Where is this data coming from? Is there any control over it? Like what like checks and balances are in place, right? And if it's these like bigger companies, then it's like, we don't have any control. And I think that's a legitimate concern, and it is a question we should be asking ourselves. And yeah, I don't know if it'll stay there. I don't know if in the end that concern, yeah, I don't know how it's going to turn out. And I think it is right to be concerned and to be asking these questions. The same way that I'm sure people were asking questions when like video became a lot more accessible, right? Or was when it wasn't as accessible, right? Like, and that was a question, right? Because you think about like the studio system, right? Back in the, I don't know, when was that? Yeah. But you think about the studio system, right? And so these studios were the only ones who could afford to make movies. They owned the actors, they owned the theaters, they owned everything, right? And so they had control over everything. And then like, where could independent filmmakers be in all of that? And so regulation was put in place to like control that, to break up those monopolies. So yeah, I don't know how it's going to pan out. I do think that there needs to be some oversight. I think we need to be asking these questions.
You'd hope that we would have learned from previous monopolies, right? To get to the democratize it sooner. Lots to think about. Lots to be optimistic.
That was a big philosophical question. I wasn't ready for that.
Yeah, we were just going to ask about, you know, how do you improve your North Star metrics and develop relations?
Yeah.
Oh no, we have to go philosophical. Liz, I think we're gonna take the win and we're gonna say goodbye before we invent a new religion or something. It's been so great talking to you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That kind of stuff. All right, take care. Cool. Bye bye.
Right,
bye bye.
Take you. Care. Bye.
You can find the transcript of this podcast and any links mentioned on the podcast section of our website, voxgig.com/podcast. Subscribe to the VoxGig Developer Relations podcast on Apple, Spotify, or any podcasting platform. We publish each Tuesday and Thursday. You can also access the archive of our meetup talks on the VoxGig YouTube channel or the VoxGig website. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.